boys and girls, pets and creatures of every make and model, fans of entertainment, shenanigans alike. Welcome back to Legends Podcast. I'm Beef.
And I'm John Lobster. It's another Surf and Turf night. Woohoo! Earlier this year, the Mr. Rogers documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor, became the highest grossing biographical documentary of all time. The film was part of the current trend towards docs, featuring serious examination of entertainment properties, driven in part by crowdfunding on sites like Kickstarter. This week, we're taking a look at a documentary on another important children's television program, He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. The doc, Power of Grayskull, The Definitive History, delves into the origins of the franchise from a humble toy line to pop culture phenomenon. But does the film earn the right to wield the sword of power, or does it feel like a cheap store brand knockoff? That's right, we're looking at you, Iraq, son of thunder.
Informative doesn't describe what this was.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to start with this because I felt like I missed He-Man by like a year. I think if I was born a year or two earlier, I would have really gotten into He-Man. I think when I was watching it, She-Ra had just come on. So I feel like I watched that a little bit more than He-Man. But I think maybe I had a He-Man Halloween mask or something, like just a plastic thing. But
I mean, He-Man hit me, but I think I probably even missed it by a year or two, because it was 82 to, what'd they say, 87, 86 and 87. They
right. Beat that was Barbie. That was the peak. Yeah. And then the movie came out in 87, the live action movie, which I think it hit right at the end, and then it didn't do the franchise any favors and kind of petered out at that point. But I was talking to my wife, and she was much more a Thundercats fan. So, and I've talked to people who are big Voltron fans versus the OG Transformers. So, I think it's really specific time when you, I guess, were born or, you know, had awareness of television that you were watching it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's
relatively unsupervised. I don't really compare this to Mr. Rogers in that, although there are morals to be had, as we learned from each episode of
which is cool that they did that at the end to, you know, right, stem the tide of the Cody Fingers
as
violence.
As we learned today, it's important to look both ways before you cross the street.
Right.
But I don't have the same fervor for He-Man that I have for the real Ghostbusters or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which hit just a couple years later.
Even like Thundercats and shit like that, you know, all that stuff that was around this time. It was
right.
It was a good time to be a kid liking cartoons.
Oh, absolutely. And I definitely respect He-Man for what the role that it played in, I guess you would call it, brand synergy. So you had what was started as a toy line. Basically, it was a, you know, we just want to create this toy line. And then they kind of slowly made up backstory as they went on. And then they said, well, why don't we just go whole hog and make a Saturday morning cartoon show? And then that took off and then sold more toys. And then
that made more of the actual backstory, though. Filmation or whatever came in,
right,
and,
yeah,
you
absolutely
know, tightened everything up.
Well, and I love, those were some of my favorite bits of the documentary where the guy's like, well, you know, he didn't know the name, so he'd call it Bone Man and Dog Man. And, you know, okay, Bone Man and Dog Man go to talk to Lizard Man.
That's
and
a great show. I want to work on that show.
They go get Fish Man, and you know, oh, that's great.
Well, they talk about the early days of Mattel, and they talk about all the trial and the licensing that they would have to go through to see something, right? The toys for Clash of the Titans were selling
and
like
hotcakes. The toys for Star Wars.
Yeah, well,
right, but I think Kenner and the Star Wars toys, that's when I think people started to realize there was money to be made here. Because if you go back to give George Lucas credit, he negotiated a deal where he did not make a lot of money off Star Wars the movie. He made money off the licensing. And so he did a deal where he got a cut of the licensing fees. And of course, everything's licensed out. So, you know, Pizza Hut and Kenner or whatever is making Star Wars stuff. He's getting that money. It's not necessarily the box office that he's getting the big paycheck from. And that was smart. And the Star Wars toys sold very well.
Which Mattel passed on.
Which Mattel, yeah. Kenner.
Well, like I was saying, though, they just had Clash of Titans, and they said the toys were selling like crazy until the movie came out. But they talked about the tooling, $500,000 for tooling, right. $500,000 for licensing. Then you spend another $100,000 for inventory.
Packaging, yeah, inventory, because you have to have the inventory to get it on the shelf.
Right. Yep. So now you're looking at $1.1 million before you even make a dime back.
Right.
So it was like you're playing a long gamble back in the 80s, really.
And they were saying, like, the movie comes out in May, but people are going to want them for Christmas.
The Star Wars one. So he's like, right. No kid's going to want cardboard. I got a coupon.
Right. I would have wanted the coupon.
Yeah, had you known. Well, Mattel got the licensing for Conan and was going to make toys for it and then found out it was R.
R-rated movie, yeah. Which I didn't realize all of the origins, although I guess I should have known, all of the origins of He-Man kind of came out of Conan and also a respect and love for Frank Frazetta's art,
yeah.
and his you know, hyper muscular shapes of people. And they said, well, why don't we make our toys look like that? Because at the time, you look at G.I. Joe or you look at even the Star Wars toys, they're very straight-bodied. And they're like, well, why don't we exaggerate these and make something really muscular and have action poses? Yeah.
Yep. Which I think was the biggest contribution, because they actually had that, instead of standing straight up like a mannequin, they had the action pose, the I'm going to club you or I'm going to jump or
right,
run. Or
right. And I had a Skeletor that I think I got at a yard sale. And I don't think he had his skull and bone harness that he wore on his chest.
Okay.
But he was just kind of in his underwear and his hood, which was always a good look.
He-Man, Man at Arms, D-Man, Woman. And then I was gonna call one C-Man,
and then I thought that's not gonna work.
D-Man became Skeletor, C-Man became Merman.
Oh, why didn't I think of that?
Oh, and Tila, when the dude was talking about Tila, yeah, Tila, she was really sculpted. She was really a babe, yeah. And the little boys liked that.
Yeah, they went bats.
They're talking about how Castle Grayskull, all of it was hand paint. You know, like,
that's amazing. Everyone was different.
Yeah, I'm sure the guys on the line ended up doing their own thing. Each guy did an M or whatever. And some guys did a Z.
The whole thing where you would buy this thing, $20-$30, whatever it was, and you would still have to put the stickers on yourself.
But that, like, was that ingenious for the inside, though. I forgot about the stickers.
Absolutely, yeah. And there was stuff up till, I think I had X-Men, you know, the Blackbird, and you'd have to put the stickers on the inside. So they kept doing that. A lot of stuff. You would have
that was
to put
$20 in 83 or 84
right.
Money.
That's an expensive piece of merchandise.
My Game Boy
I did not have many of those play sets.
Right.
But I did have cardboard boxes.
You also took your toys to your friends' houses that had the play sets.
Yeah, I mean,
That's what I did around here.
I spent a lot of time with my dad making things out of cardboard boxes.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
I had the sewers with like
The turtles,
like with like a carpet tube connecting and all the pipes, and then I had I did one for what was it, the you know, in Aladdin, the giant lion head comes up out of the desert. I made that one out of a cardboard box.
Like a playset? That's cool.
Yeah, like it was actually pretty convincing. It had the ears and everything. One of my favorites, and this sat in my bedroom probably way longer than it should have, because I was probably in high school by the time I got rid of it. But it was the clock tower from Gargoyles out of a cardboard box. Turned out pretty well.
Nice.
Actually, multiple cardboard boxes, we'll say. But, I mean, the play sets. I love the story of how Battle Cat came into being.
Oh, yeah. I don't care if you paint it purple and put orange stripes on it.
Paint it green and put, it's fine.
Well, I like that it was basically they used all that tooling from, Battle Cat was the old tiger from the big gym, they said. But they had all the bodies of everybody. It was the same body, just different accessories and different paint.
Yep.
So it's ingenious.
Brilliant. But the Battle Cat, they're like, well, he's not. It's not to scale. He can ride. Looks like a horse. Oh, so put a saddle on him.
Put a saddle on it. Sell it.
Who cares? Yeah, it's so great.
Well, and then they did. They turned around and just painted one purple for fucking Skeletor. I mean, yeah, ingenious.
It's brilliant, brilliant stuff. And
the way that they created the story about. Well, Castle Grayskull looks like more like Skeletor's. Well, now it's the seat of power when you have the two halves of the sword. That was just created because they didn't want to create another base or home. It's so cool.
It's whoever has the both halves of the sword gets to control the castle and this and that. It's fantastic. I give them credit for every dollar they earned from this.
Oh, yeah. And in 86, 87, when they were beating Barbie... They were a billion with a B dollar industry in the 80s.
Absolutely.
That's freakish. The packaging group, how they would basically just create most of everything from the story to the art to the scenarios, the names even. That was cool. I mean, you figure that all these people took the baton and ran with it for a bit.
And I love that they started to we got to make it fresh and interesting. We're going to have Moss Man.
Oh, he smelled like pine.
he smells kind of earthy, you know? It's you're like, fine.
Oh, it's green.
And I love the elephant guy with the two.
I remember him vividly. The battle damage ones, I remember those for sure.
And that, I'd forgotten about that. Remember when we talked about a while back Jurassic Park and I was talking about dino damage and stuff like that?
Yeah.
This kind of predated that, which is neat. I had forgotten.
Yeah, I'd forgotten as well. But I think the turtles had some of these as well.
Yeah. I had the turtles where you'd push their head down like a turtle, and so their head would kind of disappear, and then you'd squeeze their legs and their head would pop up.
Okay.
That was cool.
Yeah, right. So they would
I had another one. I can't remember which one it was, but his shell actually opened and he had a little storage cavity so you could put all the accessories inside his shell. Yeah, it's gross when you think about it.
When you actually think about what you're getting into in there.
Mm-hmm. But those were great. And all of that, I feel like He-Man did it first and kind of did it best, and then other people started to expand on it. Even G.I. Joe went from sort of the Barbie-sized toy, which was larger and had clothes and stuff that you could take on and off and dog tags and all that. And then they shrunk G.I. Joe down to 3.5 inches and those were the ones that had the little rubber band inside their torso, so you could spin them around. And then they all became super stylized and characters from the cartoon show, right?
Right.
The G.I. Joe Real American Hero. And then I feel like this was the same time that they started coming out with all the accessories and play sets and vehicles.
Oh, that's where they said the cash was, for sure.
Yeah. And you had a million different G.I. Joe variants, which, again, they were all kind of the same size and basically the same stuff.
But it was really the cartoon is what locked it in all of our minds. Right. I mean, 5 days a week, 13 weeks, 65 episodes.
Right.
What'd she say? That's a whole company working for 1 year?
For 1 year, yeah.
I mean, that's a good paycheck.
That put these guys in business, men and women, actually, as the documentary kind of shows us.
No, they used a lot of women animators at Funimation or Filmation, and it was cool. The mini comics that came with the early figures.
Yeah, which didn't really have anything in them. It's just kind of we're going to show threw the shit at the thing. Wall. Yeah.
Was it because early He-Man came out of the jungle raised by apes and shit?
Right. Yeah, they had no idea. They were just kind of making up as they went. But I really, it's fascinating to me watching the evolution of it. I will say that this documentary kind of, they go really into the nitty gritty of, you know, well, you know, in this episode, we, you know, we're trying to figure this out and what to do here. And, but it's, I think they spend the right amount of time on each sort of topic and they don't get too bogged down in it.
No, they talk about the rotoscoping for the early action scenes, like the stock footage and how they just made it easier. You know, 130 some episodes of Skeletor losing without him ever dying.
Right.
You know, it got, what do you say? It got really hard to figure out how to make him lose
how to beat the guy. And other shows have other villains, which is interesting. So you'll have, you know, one of my favorites, Darkwing Duck. Which is kind of based on Batman, but you have all these bad guys that, you know, he'll defeat and then they come back and
Nemesis,
things like that.
Nemesis.
And, yeah, Nemesis. And then, of course, you have Batman and the animated series.
It was interesting to see Skeletor, the voice actor for Skeletor, out on like the convention circuit and talking about his friend, you know, John Irwin, the man who does the voice for He-Man, and how he's kind of like a recluse, you know, won't come to anything.
He didn't seek the spotlight. Well, I feel like if you meet He-Man in real life, you're just going to be disappointed, right? I mean,
but
he's probably not a He-Man.
It's a voice actor, though. People get that. Right. That's especially with the convention circuit. Like Skeletor said, they'd be lined around. Oh, and Frank Langella playing Skeletor.
Skeletor in the movie. That was great. The movie stuff was good.
We have to add it. We have to add Masters of the Universe, I think, to the list.
I think that this documentary paints a rosy picture of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of makes excuses for, well, we had to cut this and we couldn't do this and we had to change this. But I think it's not as good as you remember.
No, it definitely isn't, but I'd be willing to watch it again.
Dolph Lundgren was He-Man. One of the things the documentary leaves out is that Courtney Cox was one of the lead characters.
Was she really?
In the film. Yeah. And, of course, Tom Paris, Robert Duncan McNeil, was the other Earther, who's kind of the lead in the film. And, yeah, Frank Langella as Skeletor under the makeup.
The She-Ra stuff, all the, they're going to name her Leela and She-Ra, Hera. Yeah. And then, one of the writers was like, oh, yeah, it's He-Man's twin sister. Surprise! Look what I found in the forest.
Right.
I couldn't stop laughing. But it was funny how they tried to pigeonhole She-Ra into, you know, she has to have a feeling of strength. Not that way she wasn't pigeonholed, but they wouldn't let female characters use a sword or be shown fighting at all.
Right.
So she had to, like, do a pirouette and almost kick them on accident.
Right.
So bad.
Which I don't know. I don't know if the new She-Ra will follow that trend.
No.
I know we know there's a new one coming on Netflix, which I think we're both excited for. Did you watch the 2000 He-Man reboot that they did?
No, but I might actually check it out because now I hear it's anime-ish. Oh,
yeah,
the
I watched
Four Horsemen toys.
I watched a little bit of it, and the toys were okay, and I remember some of the toys coming out at that time. I don't think I bought any of them.
They look cool, though.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of have that, I don't want to say anime feel, but the...
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they were following what, like, Todd McFarlane was doing with action figures and things like that. So they made them a little bit more detailed, more sculpted, I guess. And I don't think they use the same body mold for all of them.
No, I don't think so. I don't think you could get away with that much anymore.
Speaking of body mold, I would have given a lot of money, I think, to see a jacked Frank Langella just hamming it up shirtless.
Oh, yeah, because he said
blue.
He was ripped then.
Yeah, and he's like, they made me put on clothes.
Right.
He was kind of mad about it.
Could see him rolling around with big old legs and a ripped stomach.
But I think overall this documentary does what it set out to do. It was Kickstarter funded, so we don't really have a budget for the film, but they raised $76,000 on Kickstarter after posting. Their original goal was $25,000, so they made three times their original goal. from over a thousand backers, which I thought was pretty good.
Yeah, that's still crazy.
And you can check their Kickstarter page is still up, and you can look at some of the rewards and stretch goals that they had, which is pretty neat. They also have kind of a list of who they wanted to involve in the film from the outset, and then kind of how they wanted to achieve it. But so some of the stretch goals that they had was, you know, to keep kind of adding stuff. And they said that they would maybe do a She-Ra kind of extended look, kind of a separate standalone She-Ra, not full-length documentary, but a featurette.
Okay.
And you can, I think, buy this now on DVD. It's on Netflix streaming, which is how I think we watched it. But
yeah, they got a lot of big, big pledges.
Oh yeah, let's see. The one I loved,
$75 or more. They had 157 people.
Right. The one, and they had one donation of $2,500, which is the rare Eternian scroll, fully signed cast poster from the participants. Join us for the world premiere.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
So cool.
So, and again, we've seen other things come out of Kickstarter. One of the people involved in it did a Turtle Power documentary. Another one did one on Nintendo. So, I mean, these are kind of becoming more common.
Did you see the pledge $799 or more? You got custom Masters of the Universe action figure in your likeness.
Wow, that's awesome.
That is really cool.
Yeah, that's cool. But again, I mean, we're seeing a lot more of these. I know we talked about the Batman and Bill documentary. We also, I think around that time I watched the Doomed documentary, which was the look at the failed Fantastic Four movie.
See, I'm a fan of all these because I'm a documentary whore. So, and these, all the ones that we've watched are either done really well, or if they're lacking a little bit in their production quality, that's what documentaries are. Anyways, the story is so engaging, and they find bits and pieces of the story that I never thought I cared about.
I think this one is well done. I especially enjoy the soundtrack for it, and I like the song at the end that they have.
I think so, yes.
Yeah, you should go back and check out.
I've watched it twice now, but I can't think of it right now. So, but yeah, right.
Plays over the end credits. It's pretty good. I also like the opening, which is He-Man disassembled in the water and then kind of like coming back together.
Did they blow him up with like an M80 or something?
Yeah, I don't know how they did it. My guess is magnets, but I'm not 100% sure.
Magic, man.
Magnets.
UFOs.
Yeah, bitch.
Should we rate this puppy?
I think we can. I think we can. We can definitely draw our sword of power.
Okay, hold on.
Held it aloft.
Anthony, what is it? DeLongis, the fight choreographer, the sword guy. Towards the end of the movie, he goes, yeah, you know, and I got all this stuff. I got the New York City skyline on my head. And he goes, and Dolph is coming at me with Buick Slayer.
I love that line.
So good.
Buick Slayer.
Because that French-Canadian connector we talked about pre-cast that we were going to make Wing just say all of his lines.
Oh, right.
He owns the fucking movie prop.
He owns Buick Slayer.
So great. I wonder what that guy actually has in... invested in all of it.
Right. It's interesting. A lot of the people were still collecting stuff and were involved in it. And I was kind of amazed the names of people that had worked on the show. J. Michael Straczynski, I think, is one who did Babylon 5 and has written tons of comics. So it's kind of interesting to see who's involved in it. I knew that name.
Holy shit. Yeah. Okay. Makes sense. All right, Lobster. So for The Power of Grayskull, the definitive history of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, are you going legendary?
By the power of Grayskull.
Legend of its time.
I have the power.
Cult legend.
Legends of Eternia.
Awesome.
Tell them how awesome this movie is.
entertaining.
Power hour.
Mayable.
Cringer worthy.
Forgettable.
It's a real stinkor.
Abysmal.
I don't like to feel good. I like to feel evil.
Spring Breakers Highlander D&D.
There it is. The Masters of the Universe 1987 live action movie.
With a side of nostalgia, guilty pleasure, tingle, barf, tears.
With a side of the important lesson we learned this week was to save money on tooling by recycling designs from other toy lines. Remember that, kids. You have the power.
So,
Beef, how do you rate it?
I've watched it twice now in two weekends, and I did not lose interest either time.
Mm, okay.
I am going to say cult legend, Lords of Eternia. It is something I grew up with right when this came on. It came on in 82. I was two. So it was two till seven. So I had years of watching it where I fully recalled it, and I remember playing with the toys. And like I said, I'd always grab my toys and take them up to my buddy's house who had the Castle Grayskull. And yeah, this was informative, entertaining, and a hell of a lot of fun. So cult legend. I mean, people who aren't necessarily into the toys will get it. So yeah, cult legend. Lobster.
Well, I'm going to give it entertaining, power hour. I think it was definitely an entertaining look at the history of He-Man, the toys, the show, the movie, and various related properties. I think that it maybe could have been tightened up a little bit, but I also feel that there's something to be said for having edited conversations with people. Again, we're in the internet age. You can find a lot of interviews with these people on podcasts and in YouTube videos and recordings of panels, and they just go on and on and on and on. It is kind of nice to have this definitive look at an IP that's also been edited for clarity, and they edit out some of the repetitiveness that you get by talking to a bunch of people about the same thing over and over again. So I felt that this does a good job giving a good, succinct look at the He-Man, She-Ra franchise, with the exception of what I think is a little bit of apologetics for the He-Man movie. Now, granted, we might go back and rewatch it, and it could turn out like Howard the Duck, where I actually like it, even if everyone else says it's awful. So we'll see. We'll add that one to the list maybe for next year.
Oh, man. It was still a lot of fun to do, though. Last word on the power of Grayskull.
She-Ra.
Hera.
My Hera. Oh, my Hera. Oh, Beef, what time is it?
News time.
All right, well, it was a sleepy weekend at the box office. The house with a clock in its walls ticked upward of 26 million. Tick, tick, tick. But again, that's nothing staggering.
Crazy Rich Asians is just making money still. Like,
still making money, man.
Number five. I can't.
Yep. Sitting there at number five.
And so is the Meg.
The Meg dropped down to number nine, but it's still in the top ten. Still in the top ten.
That is so messed up. I just rewatched Infinity War about 20 minutes before the cast, and that is still a really good movie. I don't know. It's fun. It is episode 19, but it's still a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's definitely the winner of summer box office, even though they cheated by starting like 2 weeks earlier. Michael Moore released another political documentary, Fahrenheit 11/9, which opened to a tepid reception at 3 million. I don't think this...
What is he saying? It happened in November or something? No, I don't... What?
Well, it's about the election of Donald Trump. Oh. So it's 11/9 was election day.
I gotcha.
And it, you know, kind of looks at that. I haven't seen it, but what I hear is he doesn't really make what you would call a cohesive argument, although he certainly, you know, is going to appeal to the segment of the population that likes that sort of thing. There's been other sort of political documentaries that have come out over the past month. One from Dinesh D'Souza, who kind of releases one every other year, basically from the opposite end of the spectrum as Michael Moore. But that didn't do too well either. So I think people are kind of played out with this type of documentary, although documentaries overall, like we said, have been doing pretty well in the box office. Won't You Be My Neighbor, I think, is the good example. Three Identical Strangers also did pretty well.
What was that one?
Well, that's a true story based on three identical strangers, and it goes weirder from there.
But did you see that one on Netflix, like Evil Genius or something, Pure Genius, about the bombing?
So yeah, Evil Genius. So I actually remember that when it happened, the Erie, Pennsylvania pizza driver bank with the bomb on his neck.
Yeah,
bank heist. Yeah. So that's a true story. That was also made into a bad movie with, I think, Jesse Eisenberg.
But have you seen the documentary?
No, I have not.
That is phenomenal. I didn't. That's another one of those that I thought I was going to watch and just take a nap. And it's like four episodes or six episodes, and I was all in for all of it.
Yeah, the docuseries is kind of another thing that has been hitting pretty well on streaming. People like those true crime docuseries. We'll talk about another documentary, I think, in a little bit. So we know that Overlord is coming out soon. I know you're a big proponent of this one, Beef. I think you'll be pleased to know that at Fantastic Fest, it premiered and got really positive reactions.
Nice.
I did not click on this article because I don't want to know anything about it. So I just said, hey, it got people liked it.
I did click on the article, and I won't really ruin anything, but I read Shades of the Thing, Reanimator, Hardcore Horror Influence.
Awesome. So starts as a war movie, ends up as a monster movie, right?
That's I hear that the war is, neither of them is an afterthought. Like, the war isn't like, oh, it just happens to be set in war. It's supposedly brutal. Right.
Good.
Yeah.
Very good.
So, the man who seems to be everywhere in our podcast.
All right, our favorite, Dickie Bennett. Let's talk about him.
Jeremy Davies to play Arkham Doctor.
Yep.
Is this just a random Arkham Doctor in the Arrowverse, or is this...
Well, it looks like... So, as we know, the Arrowverse crossover coming up in December, which will cross over Flash, Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow, and Supergirl,
I think. All of them?
I think so. It's at least three of the shows. It might not be Legends. It might just be Flash, Arrow, and Supergirl. Because we know that it's going to have Superman in it. It's going to have Lois Lane. And it's going to have Batwoman in it as well. So this will take place partially in Gotham City. And it seems like they're setting Jeremy Davis up to play the big bad of the crossover, who is a doctor at Arkham Asylum, who is experimenting on the patients. So we know that Arkham is kind of the repository of Batman's rogues gallery. So we kind of want to see who will show up. I think it's been alluded that Mr. Freeze will be in it, because at least his wife, Nora Freeze, has been cast. So we'll see. But Jeremy Davis, I will say, Beef and I had a couple moments this past weekend where we saw him or thought we saw him.
Right.
Beef, what was your run-in with him?
There's a movie called The Perfect Day, which we might throw on this cast if I watch it again and like it. I was a bit drunk while watching it, but this gentleman on the cover, I swore was Jeremy Davies, Davis, whatever, and nope, wasn't him.
Totally a different guy. Probably different nationality.
Yeah, I think this guy was like Spanish or something.
So it was Fedja Stukan, who I'm looking at the cover for the movie. And although he is upside down, he is kind of a dead ringer for
Jeremy
Davis.
To be the cover, though, because the poster, I don't think the poster shows him the same way. But when he's upside down, I'm like, that's the guy from Lost. That's Dickie Bennett.
Dickie Bennett. Daniel Faraday. And then I was clicking through TV just earlier this evening and landed on Twister and watched a little bit of it. And I'm like, oh, great. Yeah. Philip Seymour Hoffman is in this. Oh, my God. Alan Ruck. This is great. Holy shit. Is that Jeremy Davies? And then I had to go to the IMDb, and there he was.
And he texted me. He goes, I was watching this. Guess who I saw? And I almost said Jeremy Davies. But like, I'm like,
right off the bat.
There's no way. There's no. So I went, who? And shit. He's everywhere. He's in the Legendsverse.
Apparently, he's in Saving Private Ryan, too, which I don't remember.
Yeah, he's the typewriter guy.
Oh, okay.
Isn't he's like the little smarmy dude that's... Yeah.
It's good. Yes. We'll have to go back. Speaking of going back, Veronica Mars is returning again, this time at Hulu. No Kickstarter required. And
were you a Veronica Mars fan?
Not really. I tried to watch it. I didn't watch it when it was on originally. My wife said that she had enjoyed it, so we tried to watch some of it right before they did the first revival, because I think they did a few episodes.
Okay.
On what channel was it on? It might have been on a streaming.
I don't know.
I don't know either. But they were going to bring it back, and then we watched like a season, and it just didn't hold up. It didn't really hold our interest.
Okay.
Too much, but Kristen Bell is in, I guess, so they're going to bring it back on Hulu.
Well, I mean, that's like her one super successful thing, so if they want to keep writing her checks, I'm sure she'll do it.
Yeah, yep. So Marvel's The Eternals got a director. The writer, director Chloe Zhao, will do that movie for Kevin Feige and Marvel. We don't know too much about it.
It's going to be a movie, not a show?
It's going to be a movie, correct.
Okay. I mean, it sounds interesting, at least the, you know, little bit they talk about Celestials and...
Yeah, and it kind of lines up with what DC is going to do with the New Gods.
Okay.
So it'll be interesting. And then I was reading somewhere else that He-Man was actually heavily influenced by the movie, Masters of the Universe, was actually heavily influenced by the New Gods storyline from DC.
Huh.
And Skeletor is Darkseid in it. They kind of like set it all up. We also have our first look at Joaquin as the Joker. So in character makeup as a clown. And our first look at Zazie Beetz' character in Joker.
I mean, he's got clown makeup on.
He does. He certainly does. It's not Heath Ledger. It's certainly not Jared Leto. So we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, it's Gacy almost.
Yes, it is Gacy. Yes. In fact, there's another picture that's just posted that Todd Phillips just posted an hour ago, which I definitely am going to have nightmares. I'm looking at this picture right now. And
that
I'm
really can't be him.
No, that's some. I think that might be somebody else.
Okay. But still, yeah, that's...
Whew, you'll float too.
Huh. Stop it. Stop it. That's coming up in like a month.
I can't wait. Carrie Fukunaga.
Hey, steady, steady.
Whoa. Pardon me.
Steady.
Carrie Fukunaga.
Okay.
Of Maniac, now streaming on Netflix, of True Detective Season 1. Will direct James Bond 25, stepping into the shoes recently vacated by Danny Boyle.
There's something else that this person directed that I was intrigued by. Oh, Beasts of No Nation as well.
Beasts of No Nation, yeah. His feature film.
Well, hopefully he does well, and then What's-His-Face gets the hell out of the role.
Beasts of No Nation, by the way, with Idris Elba.
Yep.
I'm just saying.
Yep, that's where I was going with this. Because then he can direct this, and then he does well. And then maybe when What's-His-Face steps down, they're like, well, we wanted to bring Idris in anyways, so
I didn't put this in news, but you've probably seen that guess who has shot to the top of the list?
Jeremy Davies.
yes, you heard it here first on Legends Podcast. We can confirm that the current odds favor Jeremy Davis to take over as James Bond. He's not British, I don't think. He's not particularly tall or muscular, I don't think.
I don't know if that's Bond hair either, but...
Right. He can wear a fedora, I can confirm.
Idris Elba, though, right?
No, oh. It's someone who recently vacated another high-profile role.
Oh, what's his face? Superman.
Superman, yeah, Henry Cavill.
I can see that.
He has shot to the top of everyone's list to be the next James Bond, I think driven by his performance in Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that he is actually British, even though he always seems to end up playing Americans with a fairly okay American accent, but not great.
But really, what is an American accent? I mean, we're such a muddle of accents anyways.
Yeah. So I think that's probably makes a lot of sense.
I like the Jeremy Davies news better.
I do too. I would root for that a lot more. But I think if they're going to make the move and have Cavill step into the role, I would rather see them do it in Bond 26 rather than having Daniel Craig come back and do another one. I think they end up in this situation where they have a great actor who's the right age, looks right for the part, and then they like stall him for a year or two. And then by the time he actually steps into the role, does the movie, and the movie comes out, by like the next movie or two, it's like, yeah, we think you're kind of getting a little up there for this. Oh, no, I can still do it.
Well, Craig hasn't wanted to do it for a while now. He just keeps taking their cash. I don't blame him.
Yeah, he sure does. He sure does, yeah. But Henry Cavill, we'll see. Could he be Bond? We have a ton of trailers again this week. And rather than cut any out, I figured we waited on these from last week. So we have a bunch of stuff. Let's dive right in. The first is a documentary from Morgan Neville, who directed Won't You Be My Neighbor and the Oscar winner 20 Feet from Stardom. This is called They'll Love Me When I'm Dead. And it is a documentary of the making of the Orson Welles film, The Other Side of the Wind, which was never released, okay? I don't know if you picked up on this when you watched the trailer. So it's an Orson Welles, famous actor, Citizen Kane, directed by Orson Welles, troubled production, and then Orson Welles died. So it was never completed, never released. But Netflix has paid to have the movie finished, I guess, fitting their vision, and then they're releasing it in November along with this companion documentary.
That's cool.
That kind of chronicles this, again, from Morgan Neville. So They'll Love Me When I'm Dead is the trailer that I posted.
Yeah, it looks good. Documentary and ties into a movie. That'll be fun. So
Yeah, kind of neat. And it's kind of neat that they're releasing them simultaneously, so you can kind of see the finished film, or I guess somewhat finished film, and then kind of look at the history of how it got made and things like that. The next one is a TV series, which I think starts this week or this weekend, called The Good Cop, with Tony Danza and Josh Groban.
Tony Danza, like, for sure.
I was like, whoa, who is that? Is that Ben Folds? No, wait, that's Josh Groban?
Yeah, and then Tony Danza's all like, I don't know, it's perfect. This I will give a couple episodes to for sure.
Okay. Yeah, so it's a good cop and then his somewhat corrupt cop dad.
Yeah, he looks pretty corrupt.
I don't know. Next, we have Stan and Ollie with John C. Reilly and Steve Coogan. That's CGI, right? That's a fat suit. He did not bulk up that much, did he?
It's got to be a fat suit. I mean,
okay.
Unless he, I haven't seen him in a while. Maybe he's just been doing the anime.
It looks like they've thinned Steve Coogan down a little bit, too.
Okay.
Because I was looking at him, and then I was looking at Steve Coogan. I'm like, he's looking awfully trim for Steve Coogan.
Well, whatever they're doing, this movie looks good. It's about Laurel and Hardy.
Laurel and Hardy, yeah.
Yeah.
It looks fun. It does look fun.
Is this
fun.
A Netflix thing, or is this actual theaters, I think, right?
No, I believe this is a theatrical release, so we'll get to see this.
That's going to be the rarity soon.
I think it's an award bait movie. I think that this
will
definitely see them get nominated, at least one of them. It's from the director of Philomena, which Steve Coogan I think was nominated for, so I could see that in awards contention later on. Probably not in awards contention will be You Might Be the Killer, which is to take a complete left turn, a horror slasher comedy.
I might actually see this.
It's got a very Cabin in the Woods vibe.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the horror movie we all know, like Cabin in the Woods, but they're pulling back that curtain a bit, so this could be fun.
It's got Fran Kranz and Allison Hannigan, so Whedon-esque as well.
Why do you say that?
Because they're two frequent Whedon collaborators.
Oh, okay. I guess I don't know these people off just by their name, so I'm a bad person.
Willow and the guy from Dollhouse.
Okay. I mean,
right?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, totally. I can dig it.
From the Riverdale universe, oh, so kind of the dark side of Archie Comics, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
I have zero interest in this.
Okay. Probably not your demo.
Probably not. But if someone tells me it's good, you know, whatever.
It looks kind of fun. People have told me that Riverdale is actually very good and appeals to mature audiences. So I think the fact that this will be on Netflix and they can get away with a little bit more.
Okay.
It might be worth a look for me.
Well, let me know. Like I said, if it's good, I'll give it a whirl.
Netflix, I mean, I feel like we say this every week, but like surprisingly, the things that you think will not be great on Netflix turn out very well. The series of unfortunate events, I think, that they did is really well done.
Was that a series?
Yeah, it was the Lemony Snicket book,
yeah.
Series of Unfortunate Events. It was the movie with Jim Carrey, which wasn't great, but the show is actually pretty well done.
What the hell is this one? Oh, The Girl in the Spider's Web. This looks pretty good. I mean,
this does look good.
I haven't seen any of the other ones, but this makes me go, okay, well, there's like two other ones. I guess I could catch up.
It's got What's Her Name from The Crown, Claire Foy. It's got Stephen Merchant in there doing stuff.
Is that who that was?
Yeah. Which one?
The Stephen Merchant.
Yeah, he's in there for sure. And again, they're making it look fun and stylish. So speaking of Daniel Craig, the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo never really materialized into a franchise here. They did make them overseas. They did make all three books into movies. But I like that they're kind of just like, you know what? We're going to pretend that all that happened and just do like the Bourne Legacy and just keep making stuff.
Might as well. I mean, you know, if she's a believable whatever, what's going on with her? So then right.
She's a good protagonist. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Haunting of Hill House, once again, Netflix series.
This looks sufficiently creepy.
Super creepy. I like that it's about dealing with childhood trauma in some kind of weird way. Obviously, The Haunting of Hill House and The Haunting were movies. So I kind of like that.
And The House on Haunted Hill was a movie.
And The House on Haunted Hill, yes, thank you, was a movie. So I kind of like that they're Haunted Mansion. That was one too, right? Oh, no, wait. That doesn't count. That was a Disney movie. I think the fact that they're doing a series that's kind of like, what happens to those characters when they grow up? And like, what weird shit do they deal with is kind of interesting.
Well, when they're that little boy's talking about, and I was so scared, I started poisoning my... And like, they're talking about their future and their own deaths.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, God.
Freaking creepy. So we'll see.
For Halloween. Yay.
Yeah, absolutely. Wreck-It Ralph 2, Ralph Breaks the Internet, new trailer.
I am more and more excited for this, everything I see.
Good. Good. Very good. There's a little bit of controversy recently. Did you see this?
No.
Around Princess Tiana from Princess and the Frog?
No.
There was some criticism that her skin tone in the first trailer was not dark enough to match kind of the original intent of the character, so they went back and did some color correction.
Wow, there. I did not hear any of that. No.
Yep. So in the new trailer, she does look different from the first trailer. She has kind of a darker skin tone.
She got a tan.
Okay. Doctor Who series 11 trailer 2. This is like in 2 weeks. We're getting more Doctor Who.
This is freaking me out. How good this looks and how close it is. You excited? No, maybe.
I'm definitely excited. Nevertheless, she regenerated. I have been on board with this for a while. I think it's long overdue. And
shit, Idris Elba could be the next Doctor Who for I don't
anybody
care.
Could be the next Doctor Who. Dickie Bennett could be the next Doctor Who. You heard it here first, folks. No, he would play a Dalek. He would be in the entire thing. He'd be like, "Who's going to be in the Dalek? Who's going to be in the Dalek?"
Dickie and then they Bennett open it pops up, out.
And there he is. He pops out. And he's like, exterminate. And you're like, what? No.
Yeah, no, this looks good, though. I think she is going to be phenomenal. I've loved her. And I think it was Broadchurch and a few other things. Yep. And
Black Mirror.
Yep. She's going to be a great doctor and screw all the haters. It's like everyone's saying all the shit. You know, why has it got to be another female in the Star Wars universe?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I love the tagline, it's about time.
And yes, it is about time. And it is about time. And I like that they're using all new monsters this year.
Yes. Yeah. And there's been some backlash about that. Like, oh, you know, you don't have to do everything new. Leave something familiar for the fans.
The format.
And I think they will. I think they will. I think they will leave something familiar for the fans. But I think just as, you know, Christopher Eccleston came in and revitalized the show, and that led to great things, and they didn't leave out everything that was kind of part of the original.
They'll bring it back. I mean, they just want a new jumping off point for people who haven't watched the last 10 years.
Absolutely. And keep in mind, this is series 11 of the revamped Doctor Who. So, I mean, the fact that we've already had 10 seasons of the established reboot of Doctor Who, I think it's okay to kind of break things down and start over again.
It ain't going anywhere.
You had 10 seasons of, you know, the stuff. Let's reset the clock and kind of go back.
Oh, God forbid that we get a whole bunch of new characters that people like, like the angels and shit. You know,
right.
Let stuff happen. Don't rely on all the old crap.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of not relying on old crap while still kind of relying on old crap, why does Bumblebee look better than any other Transformers movie?
Other than the first one, for the nostalgia's sake, Bumblebee does look kind of fun. I still don't know if I'm sold on it. I do like that.
Talk about nostalgia. Did you watch this trailer, sir?
We're going to be at Megatron or on Megatron, right? Is that what I'm getting from this? We're also going to get some scenes in Megatron.
In
what's their planet?
The name of their planet was Autobot Land.
We're horrible.
Cybertron.
Thank you. God.
Cybertron. Jesus Christ.
We're fucking horrible.
We're old. We're fucking old.
Yeah, but that's like our wheelhouse.
They're on
old.
They're on Etheria, right?
Oh, no, that's the other one. Fuck.
Eternia. Anyway, Bumblebee's out in the forest. Look what I found.
I'm ready to see this. I don't know if I'll see it in theaters. It'll all be on reports, but it should be fun. I mean, she's a good actress.
Haley Steinfeld.
That's the chick from Western.
Careful what you say. Well, careful what you say, because she was actually a child she was in True Grit.
The Western, the chick from True Grit, and she was Ender's Game, right?
She's like a little girl. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But she has grown up.
I wasn't going to say anything dirty, but thank you for you know, trying to save me.
It's the least I can do. I think this looks good. This is one of like a million movies coming out on Christmas Day, along with like Aquaman and Mary Poppins Returns.
Christmas Day.
And a whole bunch of other stuff. So we'll see how this plays out.
I have a question. How do we not know, or how does, I guess Bumblebee can't talk, but this all happened in the 80s, right?
It does kind of look like that, but I don't. Yeah,
you know what I want. So, like, I don't know. Is this a prequel? And we don't. I don't know.
Well, I think it is a prequelish setup.
Prequelito.
I guess.
I don't know. Okay. Yeah. Good talk.
But they're definitely showcasing the retro designs of some of the characters, including in hologram form Optimus Prime.
Yeah, I swear. Yep, this is a prequel before Optimus comes to Earth.
Which I'm okay with. Yep. I am fine with that. And if they use this to kind of reboot the whole thing, I'm good with that too.
The fight scenes did look better than, and like the transformations did look a lot better than just like the.
I'm hoping there's just less noise and less, because one of the biggest complaints that I have about the Michael Bay films is surprisingly that they're Michael Bay films, and like everything on screen happens all at once and you're basically in sensory overload the entire time. And when there's not sensory overload, there's terrible dialogue. So I'm hoping this is more good dialogue and less sensory overload stuff. I would actually be okay with it being a little light on action to do more character type stuff.
All right. No sensory overload.
Okay. All right. One more thing we should say. Fall TV is premiering. Starting this week, shows are coming back. I'm particularly excited for The Gifted Season 2, which starts on Tuesday, 9/25. And The Good Place, Season 3, which comes on Thursday, speaking of Kristen Bell. Anything on the schedule in the next week you're excited for?
I didn't check out all of it, but I am definitely down for The Gifted. I liked where that left off, and the couple trailers I've seen look good. So,
very cool.
Yeah.
And we'll check back in as things are premiering to discuss.
Definitely. Next time, Legends Podcast, Lost Boys.
I'm a lost boy. I believe I can fly. Peter Pan. We're off to Neverland.
Halloween.
This is holy crap.
Legends of Halloween, bro.
Legends of Halloween.
Or something.
Holy crap. Are we there already?
We are. We are back to the first, your first theme month, your first pun month from last year.
It wasn't even a pun month. It was just Legends of Halloween.
Oh, I guess you're right. Cronovember. Wow. Son of a.
Yeah, this is exciting. I am excited for the return of Halloween. I don't know if we have our schedule 100% set to say what some of the episodes are, because
let's not think, inside baseball, we might change some of those.
Let's not go too far. We might move a couple things around, but I think Lost Boys is a good place to start off for at least let's hope it doesn't suck.
That's so bad. All right, this has been episode 390 of Legends Podcast. I'm Beef saying, oh, the puns that are about to come out in this next month.
Mm-hmm. And I am John Lobster saying, remember ghosts and ghouls? The thing that we learned this week is that you shouldn't make sucky puns when it's time for Halloween. Well, if you'll excuse me, I need to go see a bone man about a dog man.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to leave us feedback, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Legends Podcast. For all our contact information, as well as other shows, look to GunnaGeek.com and KrakenCast.com. You can also visit LegendsPodcast.Lipson.com, where you'll find our complete archives. The music heard on this podcast is Danger Storm by Kevin MacLeod and can be found at Incomputech.com. The opinions heard on this podcast are those of each individual host and do not represent Legend Stream Canada, Gunna Geek, or Krakencast. No infringement is intended.